UK Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson and Defence Secretary Sir Michael Fallon are in Australia for major talks on trade and national security. Secretary Fallon has made no secret of his desire to claim a slice of the $150 billion defence spending pie, namely Australia's future frigate program worth $35 billion. The talks come amid reports of a possible North Korean missile launch later this week, as well as a new assessment from the Pentagon, which says the regimes could have an intercontinental missile as soon as next year. Senator Maurice Payne is the Defence Minister and will be meeting with her UK counterpart tomorrow to discuss these issues. I spoke to her a short time ago. Minister, welcome to the program.
Hi, Patricia. How are you?
Good. Defence Secretary Sir Michael Fallon is pitching pretty hard for the UK to win the bid for Australia's $35 billion future frigate contract. Does our long relationship with the UK give them the inside running?
Well, we're in the middle of a highly competitive tender process, so I wouldn't make a comment on specific participants in the tender itself. But what it does reinforce is the importance of our naval shipbuilding program, which is well underway, as you know, in relation to offshore patrol vessels, future frigates and the future submarine. This is about Australia ensuring we have a sovereign capability in naval shipbuilding and in all three of those platforms. So I'm looking forward to a productive discussion with Michael Fallon and Boris Johnson, and I suspect they might give that issue a run in the park.
Oh, I'm sure they will. The Brits are currently updating their own frigates, which are being built by a defence company, BAE Systems, the Type 26 Global Combat Ship. So Fallon says of this vessel, and I quote, "the quietness of the ship and the sophistication of the technology on it puts it way ahead of any European offer you might be considering." Does he have a point?
Well, I don't think you're going to be able to draw me to comment on specific participants in the tender process. What we are very confident of is that we have three very strong participants, and I look forward to seeing the process of evaluation that Defence will go through on those.
Okay, but the Ministry of Defence's contract with BAE is a so-called gain share, pain share, meaning if the project comes in below budget, the savings are split between the contractor and the government. Similarly, the cost is split if the project is over budget. Given the $150 billion defence spend over the forward estimates, is this an option Australia should consider?
Well, we have very clearly set out in our integrated investment program and through the Defence White Paper the budget arrangements for this series of acquisitions. And as I said, all of the proponents' submissions will be assessed on their content and on their quality. And I look forward to seeing the deliberations.
The Australian government wants to increase defence exports with the UK, a potential buyer. How will Brexit affect any future trade deals when it comes to defence?
Well, I think the foundation of our relationship with the UK is built over many, many, many years, both in trading terms and in defence terms. We have an extremely solid relationship with the United Kingdom. We have a trade relationship which is particularly strong. They are, in fact, our second largest source of foreign investment. That's $516 billion in 2016. They're our fifth largest two-way trading partner. That's over $29 billion in goods and services in 2016 alone. And what we come to the table with then in those discussions is very deep, very strong relationship, and one which I think we can certainly use to both of our advantages, quite frankly. I had Sir Michael Fallon with me at the Royal Australian Air Force Base at Richmond in Western Sydney this morning. We had a very close look at both the Poseidon, the P-8 that Australia is in the process of acquiring, and in fact our Wedgetail E-7 as well. Both planes we had an opportunity to inspect and a briefing on the Joint Strike Fighter, because of course we are both acquiring the Joint Strike Fighter. There is enormous opportunity for us to engage in further defence industry activity with the UK, and that is certainly something that Sir Michael and I have discussed before.
The Pentagon has drastically revised its timeline on when North Korea could have an intercontinental ballistic missile, saying this capability could be in play as soon as next year, which is obviously pretty shocking. How will the UK and Australia respond to this threat?
Well, this will be a subject for our discussion as part of AUKMIN tomorrow. I have seen very briefly reports this afternoon in relation to that, and I'm sure that with Secretary Johnson and Secretary Fallon, the Foreign Minister, and I will pursue those discussions. We, from Australia's perspective, as you know, have consistently made our position very clear. We have categorically condemned Korea's continuing activities in this regard. We regard it as a very serious escalation and provocative behaviour by what is a particularly reckless regime in North Korea. And that will be part, I'm sure, of our discussions tomorrow.
North Korea is expected to launch another missile on the 27th of July, which is Victory Day in the country. What does Defence know about this, and what is your reaction to this threat?
Well, we would have precisely the same view that that I've just enunciated, and that is to say that we will continue to work with our international partners, with our allies, to demonstrate that provocations of this nature are completely unacceptable. We are working constantly with our strategic allies and with those partners to determine the most appropriate defensive countermeasures, and that includes diplomatic means to constrain and to deter North Korea's illegal weapons development activities. And if there is another launch, as you say, this week, then that will certainly form part of our discussions as well.
If the US does impose secondary sanctions on China entities for dealing with North Korea, will Australia and the UK follow suit?
Well, I think it's premature to say that. We haven't had that discussion with our UK counterparts. As I said, that discussion will occur tomorrow. But we have significantly extended our sanctions against North Korea in recent times in response to their activities. And we will continue to take every opportunity we can under the UN Security Council resolutions to exercise those sanctions and to ensure that that we are as strong as we possibly can be in that regard.
A Chinese spy ship was spotted observing US-Australian naval drills off northeastern Australia this month. The pro-government outlet, the Global Times, reported it as just a beginning of China's future operations. Is this something Australians should be worried about?
Well, I think we've seen this sort of behaviour from the Chinese PLA Navy in the past in a number of areas, not just this last week. I understand they engaged in similar activities around the RIMPAC exercise last year as well. So it's not entirely surprising. However, we are strong adherents to the rule of law and to the observation of international law, and that supports freedom of overflight and freedom of navigation. It would be if I was to express a contrary view, that would be counter to the long-held view that we have had. So they were not particularly doing anything wrong, but we're very conscious of their behaviour and very conscious of the activities that they have underway.
Why has there been such a muted response from the Australian government? They're not doing anything wrong. I mean, this is obviously an act of provocation.
Oh, well, they're exercising freedom of overflight and freedom of navigation, as you would expect we would do in the seas and oceans through our region, some of which carry very considerable amounts of the world's trade. That sort of activity, which they have exercised in this last week, is, as I said, not entirely surprising. It's activity which they have undertaken before in relation to other exercises, and it's activity which, as I recall, the Russians undertook in relation to the G20 when it was held in Brisbane a couple of years ago. These sorts of acts are within the bounds of international law, but we watch very carefully, and one shouldn't underestimate the care with which we do watch.
What do you mean by that? Underestimate the care with which we do watch? Because it seems to some commentators that Australia has been, hasn't given a particularly strong response to this.
Well, I'm not sure what the expectations of commentators are, and frankly, the Australian government and the Defence Force doesn't operate in response to the expectation of commentators.
China has suspended beef exports from six major abattoirs in Australia. Some reports suggest, over comments that Foreign Minister Julie Bishop made over freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. Can you confirm those reports?
Well, I can confirm that, as I understand it, there has been a temporary stop put on beef exports from a number of Australian meatworks. But my understanding is it has absolutely nothing to do with the observation that you just made, but is rather because of concerns around compliance issues around labelling of meat from those particular plants. So it has nothing to do with health or food safety concerns, nothing to do with matters of international diplomacy, but it's actually about labelling of meat from particular plants. Industry is addressing those compliance issues, and I understand their hope is it will be resolved very quickly. I think it would be engaging in rather an extreme stretch of the imagination to presume that it was linked to anything else.
Both the UK and Australia have close and enduring relationships with the US, and we're both currently engaged in Afghanistan and Iraq with US forces. But the opening months of the Trump foreign policy have been fairly unpredictable, I think it's safe to say. How are you going to broach this topic with your UK counterpart tomorrow?
Well, in fact, Michael Fallon and I have spoken about that today. We both have a very strong and productive relationship with the US Secretary of Defence, Jim Mattis. We have both met with him on several occasions since his appointment was confirmed in January of this year. In fact, as recently as a couple of months ago, we sat around the same table in Copenhagen discussing the international coalition engagement in Iraq and Syria. And then 3.5 or 4 weeks ago, we were both in Brussels having a similar sort of conversation in relation to Afghanistan, although obviously the tenor of those conversations are different given they're such different engagements. The important part of the relationship, though, is that as highly trusted allies, as extremely strong partners, we are able to work so well together. In part, it goes back to your question about industry engagement as well, or capability rather, I should say. And that is, we share a lot of common platforms. We work together very closely in the science and technology development of that capability. We work together in sustainment and maintenance and in sharing very, very broadly, very, very strongly through the Five Eyes partners, of which, of course, the United States, Australia and UK are three.
Just very quickly, because I know you're very pressed with time, but just on some domestic issues, your government colleague and fellow Senator Matt Canavan has resigned from Cabinet, as no doubt you've noticed by now, after discovering he may hold Italian citizenship. Shouldn't he resign from Parliament altogether? It seems like a different standard is being held here for him rather than the Green senators.
Well, each senator makes their own decision, of course, Patricia, but I do understand that that Minister Canavan is in rather a unique situation, as was described by the Minister and the Attorney-General yesterday afternoon. I can say with some confidence, however, that I was born at King George V Hospital in Camperdown in Sydney and reasonably confident about where I stand. But this is a difficult conversation that we are having in Australia. And I think the Minister has taken the steps that he regards as appropriate, and I support that.
One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts is under really significant pressure now to prove he's eligible to stay in Parliament. He's refusing to provide evidence he renounced his British citizenship before last year's election. Should he provide the evidence?
Well, these are matters for the decision of each senator that or member of Parliament, frankly, that may be part of the discussion. I would have thought that making the position as clear as possible is the best way to go. I think that's exactly what Minister Canavan did yesterday, and I would encourage anyone who is involved in this process to do that. It is difficult. We have a huge and diverse range of backgrounds in Australia, and some of that is represented in the federal parliament. And this is an issue which we're grappling with both in constitutional terms and in parliamentary terms.
So, to be clear, you think when there is pressure and there is confusion from the public on and from clearly reporters who are sort of the conduit on particular MPs, they should provide all the evidence they can, and One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts should also do that.
I'm not going to direct or instruct any senator on what they should do. They are decisions for themselves. But I would have thought that the greater light that is shone, the greater clarity that is available, the better.
Thank you so much for your time, Maurice Payne.
Thanks, Patricia.
That's the Defence Minister, Maurice Payne, Senator Maurice Payne. And this is RN Drive. 0418 226 576 is the text line. You can also tweet us using the hashtag RN Drive.